Hi guys, welcome back to Gossip. I'm Caroline.
And this is Erin.
And this is week two.
Yeah, so welcome for episode two.
Welcome. I think on our last one, we saw we got like 41 listeners.
Yeah, we had like 40 streams on Spotify. And just so everyone knows, we now have the podcast streaming on Apple Music, Amazon Music. So basically any streaming platform. I'm blanking on the names of the other ones, but...
Yeah, no, we'll be streaming on all of them so that everyone can listen. But yeah, it's been really fun. And I think we posted on our Instagram a couple days ago that we were looking for topics and stuff just that people wanted to hear about. And we got a ton of good responses. So
great responses. And one of them being the Menendez brothers.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
We're definitely super interested in that, and we'll definitely be talking about it.
I'm still finishing the show.
So am I.
Okay. Today we're gonna take more of a turn into true crime rather than pop culture and current events. So
yeah, we were thinking, what better time to kick off our true crime segment than spooky season? It's October, we're nearing Halloween, and true crime is like
Erin's vice.
Yes, like it's my favorite genre. All right.
Oh god, well I like it too, but you like go to sleep at night listening to true crime.
Okay, that's dramatic. Well, you know what's funny, actually, that I like wanted to mention before I got into the story that I'm gonna tell today is I came across something on Instagram where like a psychologist determined that those who listen to true crime to relax are disturbed. Did you see that?
I have seen that, and I think that's completely false.
Fully agree.
What's more relaxing than blood, death, and destruction?
Exactly. And it was hilarious. In the comments section, I opened it up and just like all the true crime fans were like, that's not freaking true. I was like, oh my god. It was hilarious. And
we get defensive.
Yeah, indeed. So to get into the story that I'm gonna tell today, as Caroline said, I'm a huge true crime person. Like I listen to it when I run, when I work out, and like to and from work on my commute. I just love true crime documentaries and docuseries, just all that stuff. So I'm really excited about kicking this off. So Caroline, like, you can't just say things to me. Okay. What? You have to say them. Like, interject.
The story I have for you today.
I said that.
Oh.
God fucking damn it. You're so annoying. Stop. Like, you're like mouthing things to me like I can fucking read your lips. Fuck. God. Anyways. To get into the story that I'm going to be telling today, like, I was getting there. Okay. Fucking God. So the story that I'm going to be telling you today has become known as the Idaho College Murders. So maybe you've heard of it, maybe you haven't. I'm going to tell you about it today. So I'm going to take you through, you know, kind of what happened here. I'll get into some detail, of course. So the story takes place in Moscow, Idaho. So not Russia. All right, let me just clear that up right off the bat.
There's a Moscow, Idaho?
Apparently. So anytime I reference Moscow in the story, like, we're not talking Russia. Okay. We're talking Idaho.
Okay.
So the story takes place in Moscow, Idaho in November of 2022, but there are recent changes in the case here where the trial will be held. So kind of making this a current event and something that I think is going to be a really big thing. I think the trial is going to be held sometime in 2025. And so I think the trial is going to be pretty big thing that's going to happen. So the reason why where the trial is going to be taking place has been changed. The defense determined that in order to have a fair trial, they requested that it be moved from Latah County, which is where the University of Idaho is located and where the event takes place, to Ada County, which is where Boise, Idaho is, so the capital of Idaho.
They don't want it in the town where it took place.
Exactly. Okay. Like, they don't want, like, a super biased opinion for the jury. So, anyways, now to get into what happened. So, on November 12th, 2022, Madison Mogan and Kaylee Goncalves, I've been trying with this last name, Goncalves, both 21 years old and roommates at the University of Idaho, went out in Moscow for drinks and to have fun on a Saturday. You know, typical college students. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure, too, the situation was that Kaylee had just moved out of that house but was kind of visiting for the weekend to show her friend Madison her new car and also just to hang out, of course. So that same night, Ethan Chapin, who's 20, went to the Sigma Chi fraternity house with his girlfriend, Zanna Kernodle, who's also 20, and who is also roommates with Madison and Kaylee. And there are two other roommates who also went out that night. So in total, five girls live in this off-campus house. Okay.
Okay.
Okay, good. Just making sure. Checking in. At around 1:45 a.m., Ethan and Zanna, the couple, arrived back at their house after kind of going out there at the frat. And Ethan was there to stay the night. And Madison and Kaylee got back around the same time as them. So some of this information was hard to sort through, but I believe the other two roommates arrived home kind of just before Ethan, Zanna, Kaylee, and Madison.
Which is fair, because, I mean, when you go out in college, generally, it's no one arrives home all at the same time.
Yeah, they just all kind of generally arrived at 1:45, and the other two roommates arrived, I think, sometime around 1 o'clock.
Yeah.
So like by 1:45, all five roommates are home, plus Ethan, who's Zanna's boyfriend.
Okay, checks out.
So they're home after a night out. Now, there are two roommates that are not named, like I mentioned, and one of them wakes up at 4 a.m. to what she thought was the sound of Kaylee playing with her dog, but then she heard something like, someone's here. Like, she heard one of her roommates say, someone's here. And, mind you, this is all muffled through the door, so she's like, what's going on? So she goes to peek out of her door after hearing that comment and sees nothing. So she then thought that she heard crying coming from Zanna's room. So she opened her door for a second time, and this is when she heard a male voice say, it's okay, I'm going to help you. A male voice, not Ethan's, voice. There's five girls in that room, in that house, plus Ethan. And she hears a male voice that she doesn't recognize say, it's okay, I'm going to help you.
I just got goosebumps.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking back to being in college and, like, just thinking about hearing a voice, like, you have all your guy friends, all your girlfriends, and just hearing a voice that you don't recognize, that's
horrifying.
Especially when you're just waking up, half asleep, like.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And so, after she hears this voice, I think she then closes the door, because she was like, what the hell was that? She heard that creepy, unfamiliar voice. And so, a short time later, she gets the courage to open the door for a third time. And this is when she peeked out of her door, and she saw a man dressed in all black, wearing a mask, walk by her toward the sliding glass door. And she basically stood there frozen, like anyone would. Like, that's terrifying. And he just kept walking. Like, it's almost like he didn't see her. Like, he walked right by her. To the point where she noticed he was about 5'10", had, like, an athletic build. Not a muscular build, though, and he had bushy eyebrows. That was, like, something. Like, he was that close to her that she, with mask and everything, with the eye holes, whatnot,
There's no way he didn't see her, though. Like, if they're that close up and personal.
I don't know.
She noticed his bushy eyebrows.
I don't know. So you'll see, like, we don't know.
Okay.
So I tried to figure out what happened between the man leaving and then the two unnamed roommates calling the cops. But I think they were just in total shock and, like, didn't know what to do or what had happened. So the cops aren't called until almost noon. And mind you, it was around 4 a.m. when she saw this man. So I think they were just in shock, didn't know what to do, like, probably some drinking was involved, so I'm sure, like, it was all of, like, what just happened, you know?
You could chalk that up to, like, oh, it's all a blur, but that's a lot of time to pass between a crime that is committed, or a crime that has been committed, versus, like, calling the cops. I don't know, I feel like
it is, and I know what you mean, and I'm sure there's more to it that we don't know, because they didn't even name these roommates, so I'm sure there's just, like, some privacy reasons, and that's why a lot of this information isn't easily accessible. So,
okay,
to go forward here, the cops aren't called until almost noon, and they called in thinking one of the roommates had, like, passed out and wasn't waking up. So when the police get there, they find Ethan, Zanna, Kaylee, and Madison all violently stabbed to death in their rooms upon arrival.
Wait, just for clarification, going mm-hmm. back, who called the cops?
So that's something that was also hard to figure out. Like, I think that the two unnamed roommates, like, I think they had friends come over because they were like, we don't know what just happened. Like, blah, blah, blah. And I think it was, like, a outside person who called the cops if it wasn't one of the two roommates.
But all four roommates in that house died?
No. So there's five roommates.
Okay.
And then there was one boyfriend staying over. So that's Ethan.
Okay.
So, and then Zanna, Kaylee, and Madison were all found stabbed to death upon arrival. And there are two unnamed roommates that lived.
Got it.
So the two unnamed roommates were left totally unscathed. And that girl even saw the intruder. So When police get there, you know, they find a knife sheath left on the one of the victim's bed, and they extracted DNA from this, but they couldn't find any match in their system. So as police got into their investigation, there were cameras clearly somewhere in the vicinity because they see a white Hyundai Elantra go by the girl's house three times before finally pulling in on the fourth time around 4 a.m. the night before. And so Moscow police told authorities to be on the lookout for this white Hyundai Elantra in the area. And that's when a Washington State University police officer alerted authorities that he'd seen a white Hyundai Elantra on campus before. So he was just, this is a nearby area, and he was on the lookout. And so they found that this car was registered to a 28-year-old criminology PhD student at Washington State University. And so his name is Brian Koberger. And can I just say, like, what a dumbass. Like, you know, this man is getting a PhD in criminology. You're leaving.
And you're driving by the house three times before you actually turn in.
Like, assuming this is his car here. So, I don't know. And anyways, on December 15th, so about a month after Zanna, Ethan, Madison, and Kaylee were all found dead, Brian Koberger and his father went to drive the car across the country to their family home in Pennsylvania. Now, this car wasn't enough grounds to arrest him on, so they just had to kind of...
Naturally. I mean, they need more evidence. I get that.
Right. So, on this trip, Brian Koberger and his father got pulled over two times in Indianapolis. Once for speeding, and a second time for tailgating, literally 9 minutes later.
Seemed like
pulled over twice.
Getting somewhere in a hurry.
Uh-huh. But pulled over twice, and, like, no one thought, like, this white Hyundai Elantra, like, wasn't there a quadruple murder out?
Yeah,
like,
right.
Hello? And so, after being let go twice, which is unreal, from my understanding, police eventually put two and two together with the white Hyundai Elantra. However, Brian and his father did make it to Pennsylvania. Since they had DNA from the knife sheath... I can't fucking say that word. The sheath. Sorry, this isn't appropriate. Since they had DNA from the knife sheath left at the scene of the murders...
I think you did it.
Thank you. All police needed was a DNA sample. But the problem was how they would get one. So they obviously couldn't just arrest him at that point. They had no grounds to stand on at this point. So they basically staked out Koberger's family home in Pennsylvania, waiting for the trash to be put out. Eventually it was, and they extracted DNA from a piece of trash. And so they test this piece of DNA in comparison with the DNA found on the sheath. And it showed that the DNA found in the trash was of the father of the DNA found on the sheath. Does that make sense?
Can you repeat that?
So the DNA found in the trash matched as the father of the DNA found on the sheath. So the DNA found on the sheath
was not Brian Koberger, it was his father.
No.
Okay. This is where I'm getting
brother.
Confused.
The DNA found in the trash was the DNA of the father of the DNA found on the sheath.
Got it.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. So this was a slam dunk for police to arrest Brian Koberger. So, again, now they had solid grounds to stand on here to make this arrest. So they arrest Koberger on December 30th, 2022 at, like, 3 a.m. Like, for whatever, I don't know. That just must have been when the DNA match came in. And he was then extradited from Pennsylvania to Idaho. So police also eventually find that Koberger's phone pinged on cell towers heading towards Moscow before the attack. Then it shut off from about 3 a.m. to 5 a.m. And if you remember, the man was in the house at around 4 a.m. So perfect timing.
Yeah.
Then at around 9 a.m. on the morning after the murders, or the morning of the murders, I guess, because they were in the early hours of the morning, his phone pings again in the area. So this man returned to the house 5 hours after committing these murders. Like, what a fucking idiot. Like, this makes me so mad because this guy is a PhD in criminology. Like, he's a student to get that. And he's turning his phone on and off, returning to the scene of the crime, leaving DNA. Like, I don't know. Like, makes me hate him more.
Well, it's almost as if he wanted to be found.
I don't know if anyone wants to be found after they do something like that.
I guess.
But, like...
But it's just so aggravating, I feel like.
I know. But it's just, like, of course they're going to be able to track your phone. Like, dumbass, it's 2022. Right. Like...
I mean,
hello.
Yeah, technology.
I don't know. Like, yeah. Whatever. He's just stupid, and I hate him. So, anyways, even creepier, his phone pinged near the victim's house 12 times before the murders even happened, as early as August of 2022. And these murders happened in November of 2022. So
that's stalking.
Yeah,
right?
The fucker stalked them for like 3 or 4 months.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
See, I saw all of this on the news, but I never delved any deeper. So this is wild.
It's wild. So on May 22nd of 2023, at Brian Koberger's initial hearing, when the judge asked him how he was going to plead, he just stayed silent. Like, when they ask you if you're going to plead innocent or guilty, like, literally said nothing. So, apparently in this case, they judge by default. So, the judge writes him in that he pleads not guilty, essentially. So, if you just stay silent when they ask you that, you plead not guilty. So
that's confusing, though.
That's just how it works, apparently.
I understand that's how it works. But I think if you say nothing at all, wouldn't that... Well, to me, that makes the person seem more guilty.
Yeah, no, fully agree. And, like, I just think he's freaking obviously a psycho. But his trial is set to occur in June of 2025 because apparently he waived his right to a speedy trial. So it's just like taking a minute for them to get around to the trial.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So I think like once we go through the trial too, we're going to find like, you know, more of a motive here because like all I could find really was like the stalking, you know, like there it's not clear like why he did it.
Right. And do you know if he knew any of these girls before? And who, and when it was murdered, was it three girls and a guy, or was it two?
Yes.
Three girls and a guy.
Yeah, it was Zanna, Madison, Kaylee, and Zanna's boyfriend, Ethan.
Right. I mean, this seems like, from all the true crime things I've listened to and watched, it seems like a crime of passion. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. It felt like a personal attack.
Yeah.
And I just wonder how he knew these people, if he knew these people.
I don't know what happened. Like, I don't know if he maybe, like, was stalking the house because he knew. So this house, I do know, was a place where, like, I feel like everyone who goes to college, like, if you have off-campus housing, like, there's houses that are just, like, always for college students. And that this was, like, a house that was always for college students, always for, like, parties and stuff like that. So, like, it clearly was just a house that, you know, he knew, like, always contained college students. And, like, maybe since he was stalking them from August until November, he probably saw that it was 5 girls. And also, something else that I found interesting that I wanted to mention, the 2 surviving roommates were on the first floor of the house. Okay. So what I think, and I think what a lot of people think, is that these 2 roommates were left unscathed because I don't think he knew that there were 2 bedrooms on the first floor. He thought all the bedrooms were on the second floor, and I think the only reason that they survived is because, like, he thought all the bedrooms were on the second floor.
So do we know how he entered the house?
I think he just walked in through the sliding door. Like, I think it was kind of an in and out type of house. Like, I don't think that they...
The sliding door, like...
That's on the first floor. And so that's why the first roommate saw him walking toward the sliding door. That's how he exited. And I don't know if we know exactly... I'm sure police know exactly how he entered, and I should have looked into it. But I think he just walked in.
And the way the house is set up, you said there's 2 roommates on the first floor, and that's why they were left unscathed.
Mm-hmm.
Does the sliding door enter through, obviously, the second?
The first floor. But he just walked past their bedrooms, because I don't think he realized they were bedrooms. Like, I don't think he could, like, they weren't open. Like, he thought, like, in most houses, like, a lot of houses, you don't have bedrooms on the first floor. That's usually a second floor thing. So he walked straight up to the second floor. And these girls, that's why the girl opened the door and saw him. I think he was walking straight to the back door to exit. I don't think he even thought for a second that there were 2 other people in the house, because I think they would have gotten killed.
And that's so interesting, because I just think back to my college experience, and the way my house was set up was you walk through the front door, there was 1 bedroom on the first floor, and then the other 3 were on the second floor. And obviously all houses are set up differently, but I don't know, I just think that whoever is on the first floor, or whoever is, like, the primary first target, are the people that would have gotten killed. But that wasn't the case.
But that's why I think he didn't know. I don't think he knew that there were people on the first floor. I don't think he even thought there were bedrooms on the first floor. That's why he went directly upstairs. But that's also part of it. They're were their motives towards, like, you know, Kaylee or Zanna or Ethan or Madison? Like, I think that's what we're going to find out more about, because it's been, like, rather quiet since it happened. And I watched, like, a whole documentary on this, and, like, I was just like, oh my God, like, I live with, like, three other girls. Like, not as the same, but it's like, I think everyone, like, felt this shock because it could have been anyone type of thing. But also, I think they're trying to figure out, you know, was there a motive towards a specific person in this house? But Ethan wasn't even supposed to be there. So I think it was more, he stalked them, but it was more a crime of opportunity.
Yeah. That's so true. But I also just wonder, like, did he know one of the roommates well enough? Maybe
no,
Ethan, like, was visiting his,
like, not that they know of. Like, I mean, I don't know. So
yeah, it's really interesting. And I feel like anyone who has been to college, whether it was 2 years ago or 20 years ago, I think college feels like such a safe place for a lot of people.
It does. And
you
especially
kind of are at that age where you feel like you're invincible, and you're kind of an adult, you're kind of not,
like, this,
and that
something
just
bad would, like, that would never happen to me. And, like, that right. house is, like, and it, I think it was an area too for a lot of us. I think we experienced this in college. It was an area where it was, like, all college kids, like, living off campus. Like, it was just, like, the spot that everyone lived at, and that's how it's always, or how it's been for a while. Right. This house has always been a house where college students of the University of Idaho have occupied. But they did mention that the house that they lived in, again, like, I think they threw a lot of parties there, which, like it's freaking college, like, you do those things, right? And
yeah.
So
oh yeah,
I think that they mentioned it was kind of like a sliding door, basically, like, in and out. Like, I think there were times where there were, like, noise complaints, and, like, some, like, the tenants of the house weren't even, like, there at that point. Like, they had left and there were still people in their house, like, from the leftover from the party, and then they had gone out. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Like, so I think, like, there were times, like, where, like, who knows, like, maybe he was there, or, like, maybe he was able to just walk into, like, the house right. at some point, and, like, yeah, but that's such a good point to say that, like, when you're in college, it feels like such a safe place, and, like, you're like, I'm invincible, like, that's how everyone feels, you know,
right.
So it's like, and something bad like this would never happen to me, right? So
based on just speaking trial purposes, we don't know for 100%. Like, he hasn't been convicted.
Oh, he's fully convicted. Like, his DNA was on the sheath that was left in the bed, on the bed next to the dead victims.
Right.
Like, definitely was him.
Okay.
But he technically pled, the way he pled, the though, is not guilty is because he stayed silent.
Right. The way he pled is making it,
like, they have an iron
go on longer.
Yeah. Yes. Like, they have, like, very solid evidence that it was him. Like, why would that knife sheath just, like, be sitting in, like, you know, that was left there? And also, like, why the maybe he was trying to get caught, because that's, like, freaking stupid, but, like, why did he just leave it there? Like, obviously, like, it's not like he was in a rush, though, because, like, the two witnesses, like, there was no one coming.
And you said he's a criminology PhD?
Yeah, fucking dumbass.
So what's really interesting to me, I minored in criminal justice, criminology, and if I learned anything from that class, it was, like, I don't want to say how to cover up a murder, because that, like, sounds wrong, but it's,
but,
like,
you learn what to look for when someone has committed something.
Exactly.
Like, right? So then it's just, like, if you're learning how to, like, solve a crime, like, wouldn't you think, like, we're not here to teach anyone how to commit a murder, but, like, just what a dumbass. Like, wouldn't you think that he'd, like, maybe think, huh, maybe I shouldn't leave DNA or evidence.
Like,
I don't know. That's basic.
This is what I'm learning as a criminology PhD. This is what I've learned that people look for in crime scenes.
Yeah, that's a good point. Like, I mean, like, the fact, like, people were all like, oh, what a fucking idiot. Like, you, but I'm like, were you? But I think this
really
was his first
be
crime. Like, he wasn't found in the systems. Like, CODIS, I think, is where they put all the, like, criminals, where they have their DNA. Like, he was not found in the system. So, like, this is his, like, first, like, clearly his first, like, big offense. Like, they didn't take his prints for anything else.
Yeah. So that's really interesting and really scary, because I remember seeing this all over the news, and it was really horrifying and horrific and
horrifying.
The, I mean, condolences to the families that, you know, lost their children.
100%. You know, like, these poor families, like we said, like, I can't even imagine. And I just have a couple things that were said kind of at some vigils and by some of the parents to kind of give you a feel for, you know, what was going on. But at a vigil that they held, Ethan Chapin's mom, her name's Stacy, said, "We are eternally grateful that we spent so much time with him. That's the most important message that we have for you and your families, to make sure that you spend as much time as possible with those people, because time is precious and it's something you can't get back." And, like, what a beautifully positive thing to say after such a tragic event. Like, I don't know how she was able to even speak.
Yeah, I admire people who can be positive even in the yep. face of, like, the most negativity and brutality. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
I agree. And something else, Madison's dad, Ben, said that she was a hard worker, smart, beautiful, funny, and was nice to everyone. And that his daughter and Kaylee were best friends since the sixth grade, and that they died together in the same room, in the same bed. So awful. So that's kind of a quote from him. And wow. Yeah, and Ethan's brother and sister also both went to the University of Idaho, and they returned to finish their educations, and that must have been so hard for them. But, you know, I'm sure they were happy to kind of return to have some sense of normal, like, normal in their lives again, like being back at college and having friends.
Yeah,
it normalcy. Seemed like a positive thing for them, according to what I read.
That's such a positive thing to say, especially when, you know, your brother had faced such brutality at that college. I wonder if they kind of went there to kind of finish what
he started.
Ethan or his girlfriend and his friend, like, whatever they started, you know?
Yeah, no, I agree. And like, that's huge of them. And again, like I said, like, I'm sure as much as it was for that purpose, it was also for them to be able to, like, kind of, like, get back into their routine. Like, although, like, this, like, terrible act happened to their brother at their college, like, I feel like college is still a place of, like, normalcy for people, and, like, gets you back in your routine. You're with, like, your good friends, and yeah.
But yeah, that just is, it's, that was one of the biggest stories, I think, to hit America in a really long time. And I feel like, I don't want to say people brush past it, because I don't think that was the case, but I feel like people saw it on the news and thought, oh, that's really horrific and terrible, but then never really went back to it.
That's why I wanted to talk about it today, too, because, like, it's not talked about enough. Like, that was such a horrific event. I feel like it happened, like, there was buzz about it for, like, a month or something, and, like, now, like, no one talks about it. And I think it's going to be hugely talked about when Brian Koberger's trial happens in 2025.
Right.
But, like, I don't know, it's such a horrific thing, and I think it hit close to home for a lot of people, like, our age, and, like, it happened about 2 years ago now, so a lot of us were, you know, in college, or, like, are just kind of in that, like, around that age, you know? So it's, like, you're, like, oh my god, like, I don't know, and I think a lot of people right. could kind of,
like, you were still in college when this happened. I think I had kind of freshly graduated. I had started my job, and I saw it on the news, and I was just, I don't know, I saw it, and it made me think, like, wow,
mm-hmm.
like, it really can happen to anyone. And, you know, we're so sorry for the families that lost, you know, their children.
Yeah, absolutely. It's horrific. And I think it should be, you know, more talked about and never forgotten and closely looked at as we head towards the trial. And
right. I'll be interested to see how the trial goes.
Yeah, and we'll definitely cover that. But yeah, that's the tragic story of the murders of Kaylee Goncalves, Madison Mogan, Zanna Carnotal, and Ethan Chapin. So thank you for listening, you guys.
Thanks,
you know,
for listening. We'll be back next week.
Next Thursday.
Yeah. Every Thursday, I guess.
Yeah. Well, again, thanks for listening. And we're always open to suggestion about, you know, what we should talk about next. Let us know what you thought about our, you know, true crime segment. We always want to do, you know, the victims and the families of these victims justice as we kind of talk about this true crime, these true crime occurrences here. So, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And again, if there's anything that you guys want to hear about, we'll be posting to our Instagram, our TikTok.
Yeah. Feel free to, you know, DM us too anytime, you know, if you have any suggestions. We know. We're acting like we don't know everyone listens right now. So
yeah,
text us, DM us, whatever you're feeling. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
All right. See you next week.
Bye.